I think Sharla may be on mute.
Yeah. So until Sharla responds.
No, I started the recording, so whenever you're ready.
Okay, so we don't need to do a roll call or anything. So Lisa and Denise and Margie and Marika all worked hard on several documents that they sent out last week. And we did have a little bit of discussion going on the thread, but probably not quite enough. So I'm hoping we can get through this, most of this, and agree to these sort of the work plans. So the first document is the work plan that's on the Adobe Connect. And I was wondering if anybody had any comments or concerns with that document. And I see Steve is typing. Oh. Sharla, can you answer his question on that? Or
yeah,
is that in there? Okay. Thanks. So maybe we should start with the deliverables. The EP working group will meet this objective using this approach by producing the following deliverables: overall process diagram detailing steps to develop a new global policy for a next generation RDS from the preliminary issue report through implementation and the roles played at each step, detailed process diagram for the PDP working group itself, identifying issues, dependencies, a phased approach for policy development, proposed sequencing, and opportunities for parallelism, and checkpoints where PDP working group progress should be reviewed, approved by the GNSO Council. And then guidance on a proposed PDP working group charter, which will be included in the preliminary issue report. List of inputs to the PDP working group, both available and needed. So there are, you know, that includes most of the documents that were sent out. We would have to review to agree upon those deliverables. But I'm just wondering, does anybody have any issues or additions to that list before we start the discussion?
Doesn't sound like it.
I'd say very quiet group today. So so on the second, go ahead. Is there a hand or? No, I don't see anybody. I thought somebody was saying something. So on the second bullet point there, the detailed process diagram for the PDP working group itself, well, that whole blurb, one of the concerns I had with was the checkpoints where PDP working group progress should be reviewed. So we did have a little bit of discussion. Is Aubrey on the line today? I'm not.
Yeah.
Is that Aubrey or?
Yeah, this is Aubrey calling you.
Hi, Aubrey. This is Susan.
Okay.
So, seems to be some interference.
Yeah, I don't think it's me. I'm using a Polycom in one of the ICANN offices.
Oh, okay. Not sure what that is then. I'm on a phone.
You just sounded fine then, Avery.
Okay, thank you so much.
Just keep going and see what happens.
Okay. One of the questions, I think it was more confusion that I had just sort of been thinking about how we manage the workload of a a lot of subteams within one PDP, and you actually came up, and I was thinking of sub-chairs and having that those sub-chairs along with the chair, whoever's chosen for chair for the PDP, act as sort of the oversight group that would make sure that all the pieces being worked on interacted and fit together. You actually came up with a little bit different idea in the fact that we could have more than one GNSO council liaison, which I had not given that any thought. So I was wondering how you thought that would work and how many people would need to be. I think this is more than a one-person job to keep all of this, you know, help the chair of the PDP keep all the pieces connected. And I was just curious to know what your thoughts were on how many GNSO council liaisons we would need if we went that route.
Yeah, and I was just trying to offer sort of extra pieces for puzzle building. Because, I mean, we have done working groups where we had one chair and maybe two or three subgroups, but this one looks like it could possibly grow far more complex. And also the keeping it coordinated with the GNSO Council becomes part of an issue too. So I was just thinking that there has to be at least one liaison. That's sort of within the PDP rules, that there's one liaison to sort of keep the council and the groups in coordination. We've never done more than one. I don't see any reason why we would need more than one. I certainly wouldn't see that we needed one per track. That ends up having the whole GNSO council. We don't have that many subtracks, but it has way
right.
too many. But certainly, you know, I don't see this as one of those gating problems in that we can find sub-chairs and we can find – or co-chairs or what have you. And we can use the services of several liaisons. So to build a coordination team, essentially, is what we're talking about, doesn't
right.
seem an impossibility. And those are the two tools that we have to go with, is co-chairs / sub-chairs and multiple liaisons. And so I was
okay.
just really trying to add an extra puzzle piece.
That makes sense. So does anybody have any disagreement with that, that if we suggested that there was, you know, sub-chairs, co-chairs, however we want to term that, that helped the chair keep all the puzzle pieces moving in the same direction, or at least so they fit together, and then add as many GNSO liaison that we need? And maybe that's a question for the GNSO Council in general, you know, once we get started. Looks like Chris is agreeing. Anybody else have any? Oh, James, sorry, just saw your hand.
Hi, Susan, James speaking. It's because I just raised it, and I apologize. I stepped away from the phone for just a second, and I may have missed this. Is it safe to talk?
I'm not sure. Try again.
Okay. So I may have missed this, but when we established this EPWG, I guess my only hesitation, I do agree with the structure, and I think it makes the most sense, but my only hesitation is that traditionally these groups have been allowed to self-organize, and baking this into the initial work plan, it just, I don't know, is it presumptuous on our part? I don't mean to complicate this. I just wanted to leave the door open that they may find a better way to do it once this is all up and running.
No, I agree with that, but I think because we're giving a lot of thought to how this may work, that maybe recommendations, but not, you know, holding them to it. And you're right, a lot of the PDPs figure it out, but I think this will be an overwhelming PDP, so I thought it was worth giving a little bit of thought to that. but we don't have to, you know, set it in stone by any means. So, anybody disagree with this?
I can raise my hand now.
Go ahead, okay. Aubrey.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I just got logged in. I'm still trying to find my way around the office here. I think that it's a good point, and I think, though, that what can be done is, you know, a recommended structure that, you know, then the council deals with. You know, this is a group here that's sort of studying this and going to make recommendation to both board and council on how we can proceed. So, you know, we can stop just short of baked in and mm-hmm. just start with a suggestion that allows, you know, those of us that were in this group to explain ourselves and see if we can adequately explain it to get it accepted.
Okay. No, I would agree with that, too. And unless anybody else has a disagreement, I think we should sort of put some detail to this, maybe a little bit more detail. Definitely add in the part about the GNSO counselors and then and encourage or suggest this type of structure. And then should we look at the next steps and timeline, Lisa, or do you think we should go to the actual document, the sequencing? Because that's your overall process diagram, right?
Yeah, I would suggest that your review the timeline. This would be the timeline for this EP working group before going to the suggested approach.
And do you want to give us your thoughts on that, Lisa? How you came up with this timeline and you and Marika, really?
Sure. So the timeline starts with what we've been doing, the initial meeting in October, these phone calls in November and December, developing the flow chart that we have already in front of us. As Susan mentioned, the next steps will be to, you know, refine the process diagram and make sure that it's complete, doesn't have any gaps and so forth. The other thing, though, that we have not yet done is develop any guidance on the PDP charter. So that would potentially be a topic for January. At that point, though, the deliverables that are listed here will have been identified, and the February ICANN meeting presents an opportunity to turn those deliverables over to the community, publish them, get any feedback on them, and lead into the development of a preliminary issue report, which would occur in March. The timeline for that preliminary issue report to go out is 45 or 42 days, I think, for public comment, and then a final issue report would be drafted by staff incorporating any comments on the issue report. And that would feed into the GNSO Council process beginning in August.
So this looks like a doable timeline to me. I would, you know, in best of all worlds, I was hoping we would get this to the GNSO Council prior to October, September, but it looks like, you know, if we follow all of the processes, we wouldn't be able to. So does anybody else have any concerns with the timeline? Either is it too long or too short? Is there any addition that we missed? So can we sign off on it?
Susan, can you hear me? It's Chris. Sorry,
yes.
I think, sorry to bother you, I'm happy with the timeline, but Bruce, I think, is on the call, and he can't get his line unmuted, but I don't see him in the, in the chat room.
That probably means he's in the public listen-only mode.
Okay.
I'll forward him details.
Yeah, okay. He can't obviously even acknowledge that he can hear me because he just sent me a text, which is why I'm asking. So if someone could sort it out, that would be really, really useful. I'm guessing he's just dialed in and he's not in the Adobe room, so I expect he's dialed in on the dial-in number. Shara, if you send me the details in the chat room, I'll text him.
Okay.
Oh, hang on. No, he says I'm on the phone bridge, but it was set to mute for some reason. He can hear me. Okay, I'll check. I've got him on Skype now. I'll make sure he's got the right dial-in number. Leave it with me. Sorry, Susan, to interrupt you. I apologize.
Oh, no problem at all. And I'm assuming he may have some input, so... Is that you, Bruce? No. So any other...
So hopefully it's Don. Can you
Hello?
Hear me? Hello?
Yes.
It's Don Blumenthal.
Oh, hi, Don.
I've been struggling with the same problem Bruce had for about 20 minutes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had different code, but... Charles sent me the right one.
Okay, so hopefully. So were you able to hear what was going on or not?
No, I could hear. It was just, couldn't talk. I'm fine with everything I heard, though, so I'll just make it short.
Okay, so no objections to the timeline okay. All right. So unless Bruce comes on and says that the timeline is not the next steps and timeline is not acceptable, or he would like some revisions, then we'll just agree that the timeline is acceptable and that we're going to move forward following this timeline. Does that sound good to everybody? Any?
Yes.
Maybe. Yes. Okay. All right. And Lisa, which document do you think we should look at next then? Or is there more on this?
No, I think if you have all the input that you need on work plan and concurrence to the rules and timeline, you can probably switch to the other document that was sent out, which on the very first page says sequencing of VWG principles as input to the GNSO PDP draft 3.
Okay. Okay. So this is basically the same, just a revision of the chart that we discussed last time, except with the summary of the GNSO policy development process. Is that correct, Lisa?
That's this first page, yes. The refinement on this page was incorporation of the checkpoints and making it clear that in terms of sequencing that there were opportunities for parallel development, but not necessarily, that wouldn't necessarily have to be done in parallel.
Okay. So we, maybe we should start with the four-phase. Somebody got something going on there. Before phase one, preliminary steps must be completed as shown on page 4. So let's jump to, okay, that's not what I thought it was. Well, let's jump to page 3, actually, unless somebody wants to discuss the GNSO policy. development process. So on page 3, if you look at the bottom, the little red triangle trimmed in blue is where we would ask for GNSO council approval. And so there's three, on page 3, there's three different sections or three different points where this would, the PDP would return to, or the results of that section of that, of this large PDP would return to the GNSO Council for approval. And I wanted to make sure that those are all in the right places and or you agree with them or you think that we should add further or additional approval points. So it's the first one is after the preliminary issues report and the final. And James? Go ahead.
Hi, Susan James speaking. So, my only question would be, and I think this is good so far, just at first glance, my only question is that whether each of these tracks is always going to have a GNSO council, let's say a decision point at the same time. I mean, some of them might need them, you know, I don't want to say intercessionally, but at some point in between the checkpoints or the mile markers that we established here. So, I mean, is there a mechanism that would allow for, let's say, liaisons of these different tracks to involve the GNSO prior to one of these established points? Or are these just the required points? Can we add optional points?
My understanding, these would be the required points. Marika, if she's, or Margie might, yeah, Marika's on, might be able to answer that question a little better. But I do think as if there's a GNSO council liaison that they could go and if something was identified that may not be going in the direction that the council would agree upon, they could come back and ask the council. Would that work, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm looking at the red triangles, and I actually think that the second one is probably one of those additional points that was suggested to be built in. Because as I understand, I think that the first red triangle is basically the initiation of the PDP and adoption of the charter, and then one completely on the right is basically the approval of the final report. So my understanding was actually that the middle triangle is that intermediate checkpoint, which you know, may consist of a formal approval, even though that's not a requirement currently under the PDP, but I don't think anything would you know, prevent the GNSO Council to write that into the charter that at X point the group is expected to come back to the Council where you know a vote will be held on how the process, whether or not the process proceeds or what the next step would be, if I understand it correctly.
Okay. And I do think we discussed that somewhat, that once the policy requirements were completed, that the council should be considered. Lisa?
Yes. So the reason that we incorporated that triangle at that point, and Rick is right that that's in addition beyond the mandatory steps, was in our last call there was some discussion about having gotten to the end of what's labeled here as A, but the first phase of the PDP working group where all the basic requirements are laid out, gaining council approval on all those basic requirements before going into the functional design phase, that phase two, that would be necessary to sort of lay that baseline. Once those requirements were established, then the details could be fleshed out, and in some cases sequentially, in some cases parallel, but the idea was that you'd start with requirements that the council would have had an opportunity to weigh in on and approve. So that's why that additional step was added. And then I think to your question about process going forward after the end of the first phase of the PDP working group and the beginning of the second functional design, those items might be worked at different times on different schedules, and so that would be where it's important to have either the oversight group or GNSO council liaison involved to help make sure that each of those efforts didn't stray too far from the requirements and that there were not significant gaps that opened up between the efforts that are going on in parallel. So that was the idea here.
Yeah. Thank you. And Margie?
Yeah, this is Margie. I also wanted to suggest that you probably don't need I think we suggested a date for this to be done by. Some of these, you know, it may take a while to work through all of them, and I'd probably encourage not requiring a date for these to be completed by, but merely that you'd have the council vote when these are done.
Okay. All right. Denise.
Yes. Although Margie and I almost always agree on everything, I have a slight different perspective on this, although I agree about the end point and the council vote. I think it's important to suggest and really encourage work schedules and timelines for all phases of this work. Even if it turns out that the timeline is missed, I think, especially given the complexity and all the moving parts, I think it would be very beneficial for the community to go through the process of agreeing to specific work schedules and timelines to try and meet.
So, but is that something we could sort of impose on them, or is just part of the charter?
Well, so we, speaking of, I assume as the working group, don't have the authority to impose anything. So really everything in totality that we're doing is advisory in nature. But personally, I think it would be worthwhile to encourage sort of this level of planning and scheduling throughout this effort, you know, given all the moving parts and the complexity. If they choose not to do it, that would be a separate issue. But I think given all of the effort this group is putting into this planning and structuring of the events, that the planning and scheduling approach would be a useful thing to incorporate in our suggestions.
Okay. Can I also just be added to the queue, Susan, when you're ready? It's Bruce Tucker.
Yes. Please go ahead. We were waiting for you.
Thank you. I think I got two meeting invites in my diary for some reason. So one was obviously the public invite, one was the private invite. Some of us have been dialed in on the public one. It was a bit confusing. But anyway, a thought when you were talking about coordination of the different working groups, and I think it's probably in the early stages of the work, particularly when you're at the sort of requirements principle stage, that I think the cross-fertilisation and coordination is particularly important. And what I'd suggest is that we look at structuring almost a Who Is conference around this, with structured sort of breakout sessions and coming together. So you might run it over 2 or 3 days, or maybe before or after an ICANN meeting. And if you did it over 3 days or even 2 days, you'd sort of say, okay, I've got these four parallel streams running from, you know, 9 until 10:30, and then between 11:30 and 12:30, each of them are getting together and sharing what they've been working on and getting any ideas from anyone else. And then they go into another working session between, you know, 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock or something. And then from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, you all get together again and share where you're up to. I think something structured like that in the early stages of the work would be really useful, because I think working groups can work very well once the general principles are agreed and you're trying to define, I don't know, some specific field in a Who Is entry or something. And that's something you can go off and do privately, or not privately, but in separate session. But I think given there's so many independencies, I think it's really important that you have a structured event that goes for a couple of days with conscious of parallel and combined sessions.
So that's an interesting concept. Let me just ask a quick question, and then I'll go to you, James. Are you saying at the beginning of when the PDP is first created and they're discussing the policy requirements, or would you see doing that for each and every one of these, the policy functional design and the implementation guidance?
Look, I'm thinking particularly when we're talking about getting agreement on the requirements and the higher level issues. So I agree. Once you get into detailed implementation, I think it's different. But you know how there's three phases. I think phase one particularly should be done in that format, maybe even the beginning of phase two. And then when you get right down to the detailed implementation, then, yeah, that I think can split off separately.
Okay, that's an interesting concept. James? Are you there, James?
Sorry, can you hear me? Am I on mute? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? I'm not on mute.
We can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. I don't know what's going on here. I wasn't on mute. Just wanted to lend my support for Bruce's intervention and the idea that the face-to-face meetings are a bit of a commitment, but I think that they can really push these timelines very quickly down the road and get to some more actionable work products in a faster and more expeditious manner. I know Denise said something about tacking them onto existing ICANN meetings. You know, I think we should probably think about two or three future ICANN meetings in sequence, and it starts to look a little bit like a review team or the EWG itself. So just wanted to lend my support for that idea. I think that has I've participated in a couple of those types of sessions in the past, and I can attest to how effective they are.
Okay, good. Lisa?
I just wanted to observe. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I just wanted to observe that that actually is very similar to the way that the EWG evolved in its work. And one of the things that I observed in the way that the EWG worked is that in our first meeting or two, we all met entirely as a group so we could sort of get on the same page. And that might correspond to the beginning of phase one here. After that happened, the EWG split up into sub-teams that met both intersessionally by teleconference and then in person, face-to-face, usually 2 days, one or 2 days before the EWG met in its entirety. So every face-to-face meeting that we had from there on started with the sub-teams sort of finishing their homework, if you will, and then bringing it back to the full EWG to discuss and make sure that all the sub-teams remained in alignment and to raise any questions that might come up about either misalignment or gaps and give everyone a chance to weigh in on the work product.
And you know, just from also participating on that group, I thought that was a really good way of doing it. We had the chance to really discuss things as a whole group and see the pitfalls or where we'd actually come up with something that really made sense. There was a validation point for the work. It also allowed us, if there was a pitfall to it, then we were able to brainstorm and, you know, to figure out the fix for that. So I do agree that would work. So my question, Denise, is that, or the board, is that possible? I mean, it sounds like from the chat room that it is, but can we sort of mandate that or suggest that, encourage that?
Yeah, we can certainly suggest it. And if this is a direction that the group would like to go, we can certainly create some plans and propose some budgets to support it.
Okay. That's a great idea. Okay. Okay. Is there any other input on this slide? In the way the work has been divided up, we sort of just discussed that before at our last call.
Susan, I'll just point out that the one other change that was made on this slide was to split out the benefit analysis as a separate item. Otherwise, the rows on this chart are the same as we saw previously.
Oh, that's right. And maybe we should talk about the benefit analysis and the risk assessment. We do need to define what that legal analysis is, the benefit analysis, which we've broadened to include the whole community instead of just LE. But we may want it, I mean, that was more something I thought we should be doing. So should we talk about that? Did anybody have any input on the, you know, the requirements? What are we looking at in a benefit analysis or the risk assessment? For the legal risk analysis, you know, in the EWG, and I did put this out in an email, the retention of data and the transfer of data was a concern. It was something we always struggled with. So it seems like on a very top level or high level that we should maybe look at those two issues when it comes to the transfer of data between, you know, the registrar, the registry, the individual where they reside. James?
Hi, Susan. James,
add me to the queue as well, please.
Okay. I'll put you in after James, Bruce.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
okay,
we can.
Okay, great. So, you know, I see where we're going here, and I just would want to be cautious about laying out very prescriptive subjects or concepts or categories of topics that the working group should consider. I think we can lay out, for example, non-exhaustive recommendations, but I think that through the course of their work, I don't want to unnecessarily limit those discussions, you know, and we could certainly see someone saying, well, you know, it wasn't on the list, so therefore we can't talk about this, it's out of scope, or, you know, something like that. And maybe I'm being overly cautious, but it's just something that was occurring to me as we were going through this section.
Well, I can understand that, except that we did all discuss that, you know, and Charlotte put up this page five where we decided as a group last time that these are some of the additional inputs that we need to provide to the community before the PDP starts as part of the report. So we could
right.
back off of that.
Well, I agree with that. I just I would be and I think that it's okay to put those things out there as prereqs, but I would hate to limit that. I mean, the group may come up with more, for example.
Right, but we would want to deliver these additional inputs before they start. So at least they'll have as some of the groundwork is done, but yeah, they could add on. So, and Don, did you have a comment?
Just really briefly. I agree that we should enumerate at least some, but not foreclose other possibilities as they come along. And what's nice is at least some of these issues are already being tackled by or have been tackled by other working groups. And I'm seeing some commonalities with the PPSAIA, I know with the Think Who Is group. We looked at retention and data transfer issues. So there may be some things there we can pick up on.
Comment, Susan, if I can speak.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I think I'm actually supportive of doing some analysis on the legal side, because I think it's both relevant to the current WHOIS implementation as well as this new directory service. And I think the way to tackle it, it's a little bit of an 80-20 rule, I think, in that 80% of the registrations in the GTLDs probably come down to 10 countries, I would imagine. I could probably pick the top five. It's probably like US, Germany, UK, and so on. If you took those top 10 countries, I think where you'd start with is a set of privacy guidelines from the OECD, which is a good set of principles. And then there's a set of implementations of those in the sort of 10 countries where there's the most registrations. And then there's requirements on both the party collecting the data as well as the party storing the data. And that it's the party collecting the data that I think has been missed a little bit, because at ICANN we've been focused on saying the party that's storing or publishing the data has got to meet certain standards. But, sorry for the background noise here. But so does the party collecting the data. So in one country you might need explicit consent. In another country you might need, written consent to have data published, etc. So I think we've got to look at the different rules that apply to the collection of data in each country as well as the rules that relate to the release of data. So just think a survey of those rules in 10 countries would be really helpful. And they, I think, would then be requirements that would feed into this process if we did it in a more structured way. And if you think about what's going on with the data privacy, the exemption rules, the staff has built up a lot of knowledge here now, because we've already got probably 3 or 4 countries that have now got exemptions. So a lot of the data is starting to get collected.
Mm. So would you, I have a few questions for you. Would you take the GTLD registrations as a whole or .com registration to determine those 10 countries?
I think you could do either way. I don't know whether there's any difference, but be interesting to see if there is. But I'd just say GTLDs as a whole, it depends how you're going to collect that data. I mean, I think something that roughly gets your top 10 is going to be pretty obvious. There's plenty of online tools that will give you that.
Okay. And then I'm a little concerned why transferring of data isn't a concern to you.
I think it is too, but again, those rules are country to country, aren't they? Or are there some international treaties on that topic?
Yeah, I wouldn't know on that one. Okay. I think that's a good idea. Don, did you have a
question? Yeah. Just to address that a little bit, there aren't treaties that I'm aware of. There are things like the safe harbor between the U.S. and the EU concerning the EU data protection directive, but most of the issues just come up with in the context of data transferring from a country that has very strict privacy rules to a country that may not, and just the legal ramifications that come up when that occurs.
So the current agreements then, Don, would be more bilateral then. And I think some of it, Susan, is in free trade agreements. I know in the free trade agreement, I think, between the US and Australia, there's a WHOIS provision in it. You can probably, again, you could take the top 10 just to get you a starting point and see if there's any bilateral agreements between those that are relevant.
If I can add, when I was typing in the chat, there's this privacy working group that just started up within ICANN. I signed up for it in Los Angeles, but I just got the announcement of the mailing group, so right now I don't quite remember what it's all about, but I'll check.
Okay. Okay. And Lisa?
Yes, thanks, Susan. I just wanted to ask, it's easy to figure out the top 5 or even 10 countries by volume of registrations. it might not be easy, but it's doable to maybe take an inventory of the laws that apply to data collection, storage, and transfer within those countries. I'm not sure whether what's being asked here, though, is some analysis of those and how they apply to who is or to the RDS. Susan, what are you thinking? Are you looking for that next step?
That's what I was envisioning was, you know, if, you know, with certain scenarios, if you are the registrar in country A and your registrant is in country B and the registry is in country C, what issues are we running into with the collecting, storing, and transfer of data? I'm not sure exactly how to really structure that, you know, request for a legal analysis, but it seems like it should be done. So hopefully we can flesh that out a little bit more here.
I think there's two phases to it. One is identifying what are the rules in those situations, and then you would then look at a reference implementation and see if that reference implementation could meet those rules. They're slightly different things. One is just saying, here's the rules, you know, like you might need consent or you might only be allowed to retain data for a certain period of time. But a lot of these things relate to what's the data being used for, is it reasonable? You know, the laws are pretty vague in a lot of areas, you know, that really gets tested in court ultimately.
Right. Okay, James?
Hi, Susan. James speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't mean to overcomplicate this, but as part of that review, we should probably understand, since the U.S. doesn't have a single national, or at least maybe lacking in a single national law, whether or not we need to take that down to the state level. Not trying to be difficult, just something we should put on the table. Thanks.
Okay. State level. That would cause me concern, but okay. Lisa?
I'm trying to remember what I was going to say.
while Lisa's thinking about that, I was going to say, James's explanation there was news to me, but it explains a lot. I must admit, I've always not understood how the U.S. handles privacy law, and now that explains it, it's not centralized.
Yeah.
Oh, I now recall what I was going to ask, which was, is this an analysis step, so not just the inventory of, you know, the rules in some subset of countries and perhaps states, but the analysis of what the implications are. Does that have to be done before the PDP working group starts? Does it simply have to be done before the privacy subteam drills down into the details? What are people's thoughts on that?
Okay. I'm taking copious notes. Margie's next, but we'll get back to your questions. We need to think about that a little bit. Margie?
Sure, yeah. What I wanted to suggest was that we'd want to be a little more clear on the scope of the kind of legal analysis we want to do. So as we mentioned, if it's the top, you know, say 10 countries, and if it's the U.S., all 50 states. But you also might want to look at it from, you know, the perspective of not just, you know, what is to be designed, but how it also affects, you know, how does the current system stack up to it? Because I think that's one of the momentum for changing, is that the new system would have a better ability to address those issues. So you almost need a comparison in some way. At least that's what I was, you know, I think those are the kinds of things we'd want to explore and be clear in our document that we share with the community about what is the scope of the legal analysis to be done.
Right. Okay. And Ron?
Thank you. So two things. First, I'm kind of alarmed at James's suggestion. I think it's certainly essential. If you want to get a comprehensive look, you got to do it state by state, but it really doesn't scale across the world. So I'm not sure that it's entirely a feasible thing for us to take on. The second thing is, in response to Lisa's question that she posed, I think the magnitude of what is being suggested is large enough that if we were to wait for that work to be complete before any PDP begins, we might be waiting quite a while. So my preference would be to try and do these in parallel rather than do it sequentially.
So, Margie, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Okay. So, I'm a little concerned that if we started on the policy requirements, but without having some of the basic legal analysis done, that it would stall again for the same reason the WHO is issues have been, sort of stonewalled for a long time. And I agree with Margie that we should see how the old system, the WHO is system, current WHO is system, stacks up to that analysis. So it should be scoped for both. Is this something that ICANN would pay to have done? And is this, if we could put together a working document by January and get it out to a law firm that ICANN trusts to, you know, at least tell us, is this possible or is it not possible to do this, and what is the time factor? So I'm going to go to Denise before you, Lisa. Sorry.
It's certainly feasible, but I think as Margie has noted and Lisa may well follow up on, it will be, you know, really important to make sure this is properly scoped and connected, and we're very clear about how this would fit into the PDP.
Okay. Well, do we all agree that we should work on this and add that to, you know, try to work on it in the next month and make some decisions on it by our January call? And Lisa, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say what Denise said about needing to scope it in order to, you know, actually take any action on it. It sounds like there's not disagreement that at least the first step of creating an inventory of the rules that apply in some, you know, subset of countries would be the starting point. So maybe that would be a tightly scoped way to start the effort, get that inventory done, and then proceed from there into whatever, you know, analysis, either, as Margie suggested, how this applies to the existing WHO is system, or that in conjunction with how this might apply to a new system. It would be hard, I think, to get anyone to do an analysis of how this might apply to a new system without some sense of what the new system looks like. So I'm not sure how soon that could be done. It seems to me that that has to be part of the PDP development process and not something that could be done in advance of the PDP working group.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's work on an inventory to identify in the top 10 countries the rules to start, and then from that we can figure out how to scope the analysis. Does that sound fair? And Ram, you've got your hand up.
Thanks. I just wanted to underline, I think we could do the top 10 countries. I'm not opposed to that, but we should be careful in making sure that the conclusions that we draw and that will inevitably end up being extrapolated for the rest of the world and the entire system. We put some caveats, we put some clearly defined language that says that we're basing it on these top 10 countries, which not so coincidentally will be probably mostly developed nations with somewhat more evolved thinking on many of these issues. So I think we need to be careful about how we represent the data that we get and the analysis, and be sensitive that the data that we get is not necessarily representative of, or it can't necessarily be used to extrapolate across all of the world, especially in developing nations where, or in other nations where the state of thinking on these sets of topics is still evolving.
I would agree. That's a really good point. And I would also want to see, to know what those top 10 countries, I would give a guess at it, but I don't know if I would be right. So I think identifying those top 10 countries by registration might sort of form what we're doing, and maybe we want to add other countries that we know are either emerging nations or have strict privacy rules, and maybe tweak that list a little bit too. And then Don?
We can broaden our scope a bit here by focusing, by also looking at things like the APEC framework that covers the Asia Pacific. You know, that's a very advanced framework, in some ways, in my opinion, superior to the EU Data Protection Directive. There are ways to broaden what we're looking at.
Okay, that's a good recommendation. We can look at that. All right. So I will put, and with Lisa and Margie's help, put all of this into a document that we can share and work on between now and January, and decide on when or what, you know, get an idea of what those countries are and whether we need to start there to add or delete some of those. And then, so if we get this into a document form, I think we could sort of discuss it more deeply and get more work done on it. So, but a lot of good ideas. The other issues, I don't know if nobody's got their hands up just yet, was the additional inputs, was the stakeholder inputs on costs and benefits. I'm not sure how we would go about that. Lisa, did you have ideas on how to do that?
So I think for each of these additional inputs, there's probably effort needed to scope what that additional input is, what's the purpose of the input, what are the questions that really need to be answered, and when. We've just kind of gone through that exercise for the initial legal analysis. I think we need to do that for costs and benefits as well. Identify what the purpose of gathering the input is, a method of going about doing it, and the timeline for when it would be needed. And I would start with what the purpose is.
And we would do the same for the risks and impacts?
Correct.
Okay.
And I think we have somewhat of a model for doing this. The EWG did do a preliminary survey on both risks and benefits, but I think the understanding what the goals are here would help shape what that survey might look like, and that would help understand what kind of methodology you would need to actually get those inputs. I know Steve had mentioned on a previous call he was hoping that there would be something more concrete coming out of this in terms of benefits than just, this would be beneficial. So we need to look a little bit more closely, I think, at what that something deeper would be.
I completely agree. Does anybody have any thoughts on what we want to look at, the purpose for looking at the costs and benefits or the risks and impacts? I have to run and grab a power cord because my computer's about to die. I didn't notice that till now, and I'm in a conference room. So maybe, Lisa, you could get the discussion going. I'll be right back.
So, Lisa, you were talking about what that survey might look like that would address those issues. Is that what you're asking for input on?
Or more specifically, what the nature of the outputs have to be? What is the purpose for doing the survey on costs and benefits? How do you need to have the benefits characterized? For example, where the costs characterized, who you would get them from? Putting together a survey is the easy part. Understanding the reason why you're asking the questions and what the outputs you need should look like is the hard part. James, you have your hand up.
Hi, James speaking. So I think that, you know, this can be, we can get industry to step up here a little bit since they would be bearing the costs of a transition, both the upfront cost to develop and deploy a new system, but also the ongoing cost to operate and maintain it. So, you know, I think that we can construct a survey that targets these questions to industry and then generate some sort of an aggregate figure on a, you know, whether it's on a per domain name basis or a per record basis, and then we can use that somewhat bluntly and crudely, but use that those statistics to project how this will scale up based on domain growth patterns. So I think it can be done, and I think that, you know, we just need to pin down exactly what we're asking, and then ask our folks in industry to step up.
Does anybody want to take the? I'm back. Sorry about that. I now have power. Does anybody want to take that on as a to-do in the next week or so and propose a list, or several of you? Yes, James?
So, Susan, this is James. I would love to volunteer for that. The problem is the next week or so.
I know.
I'm pretty much out of pocket beginning tomorrow through, well, then we start to run into the holidays and it gets very, very messy. So, I'm happy to take this on. In fact, I kind of find this sort of interesting, but I'm not sure that I can commit to the time frame. So if there are other folks who maybe have some more availability between now and the end of the year, maybe we can work together.
Well, if you do have time to just put a little bit of a few of your thoughts of what should be included, the purpose and the questions, then that might help the rest of us move forward to.
Sure.
Anybody else? Okay, thank you. And anybody else that would want to work on that?
Nope.
Well, maybe we can, Lisa and I and Margie can brainstorm about that and get something out to the list that would help spur some discussion. Would that work, Lisa?
Sure.
Okay.
Susan, it's Chris. I'm happy to help if I can, just by having a look at some stuff before you send it out if you want.
Okay.
It'll be good. Just sort of, you know, right. I can't necessarily do much, but I can certainly provide some input if it's helpful.
Okay. That's always another set of eyes, and, you know, input is always good. Okay. So we'll work on the stakeholder input on costs and benefits and risks and impacts. there anything else that we need to discuss today? I think if you look at the page 8, the next step, so I must say I can barely read it. If anybody's reviewed it to see if there's anything there that doesn't seem to fit.
Susan, it's Chris again. It looks fine to me. I mean, it's obviously got to be flexible because of stuff that happens, but I think as a starting point, it's fine.
Okay, sounds good. And James, I've got your note in the, you're talking about costs, which is fine. Any sort of starting point is good.
Yeah, I just think, sorry to jump in, I think benefits is going to be very difficult to quantify.
Yeah. I would agree with that. But worth the attempt, at least. We should give it some thought.
Right. So. It's just going to be hard to put a number on it.
Right. And everybody's, it's going to be much more subjective and anecdotal, in my opinion. Lisa?
As far as trying to quantify the benefits, I agree with James. That's pretty hard, and I would actually suggest you might want to take a look at the write-up that we did on the results of the EWG survey. That would give you a sense of the kind of answers you get to benefit questions, and maybe a starting point for asking better questions, more tightly focused questions to get you something to work from. Susan, you asked about, is there anything else we need to talk about? And I don't know that we need to talk about it today, but maybe someone could take an action to work a little bit on starting to draft the proposed charter for the PDP working group. We talked about there being a proposed charter as part of the preliminary issues report, but that's the one thing that this group has not really talked about yet. Maybe just getting something on paper to start with would be a good next step for discussion on our next call.
That's a great idea. And, Marika, isn't there sort of a standard template to start from, or am I...
Yes, this is Marika. That's correct. We have a charter template, and you know, some of that language is relatively boilerplate, so I'm happy to provide that.
Okay. So maybe we can, if you can send that out for people to review, and maybe we can get some volunteers to start working on that too. So, Aubrey?
Yeah, that's something while I probably can't help much on the next 2-3 weeks, it's certainly something that I'm willing to work with Marika and others on. This is going to be a fairly complex one to put together, so it will probably take a little bit of time to work out, but it's certainly something I'm willing to volunteer to work on, but in January.
Okay. But that's good. Thank you so much. Yeah, the holidays are going to interrupt us, I would say. All right. So we've got a few to-dos and some things to get out to everyone and some thinking to do. But, Lisa, was there anything else that we should cover?
No, I think that's it. It sounds like some of the action items won't really get going in earnest until the beginning of January. That suggests maybe the next call should be later in January, not 3 weeks from today.
Oh, I didn't look. I was wondering, what is our next scheduled call?
We don't have a standing call schedule, but we have been aiming for about 3 weeks in between, but that just doesn't seem reasonable in this case. And I know Margie has her hand up.
Yeah, the only concern I have about the timing is you're looking at Singapore in early February. So if we want to have something to share with the community in the Singapore meeting, it almost seems like we may need 2 meetings in January because, it's very early in February.
Yeah. So January is already crazy for me. but I'm sure somebody else can step in to help.
Why don't we take the discussion on, I mean, it's easier to do this on email, isn't it, on the list, because
that
you
is
can
true.
Look at yep. polls and work out times rather than discussing it now. But I do think,
okay.
I think it was Lisa, is right in that if there's a goal to get some stuff done for Singapore, then yeah, there will need to be, I would have thought, at least two meetings. To try and nail everything down so that we use the Singapore meeting to its best advantage.
Okay, so maybe we can, I'll talk to Charlotte about a doodle poll to figure that out for January. And we'll also get together some of these things that we've discussed today so that people have something to work on too. In preparation for those meetings. So. All right. Is there anything
this is
else?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to bring something up about preparing for February and Singapore. We look at this and we kind of understand what we have before us, but it's complicated. And I think where we're, I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't have two meetings, we shouldn't be working to get more done, but I think that if we had sessions where we were just explaining this, how far we've gotten now, we've used up a several hour session. So we need to do more so that we can meet our deadlines, but I don't know that we need to do that much more to have a lot to explain already.
Okay. And so actually that is a question. Are we speaking to the community in Singapore? Denise?
I thought that was the presumption of one of the comments.
This is Margie. What we were thinking about was having it be part of a session on who is. I didn't think that this was a full, topic that would need an entire hour or hour and a half, but maybe I'm wrong and maybe I was presuming too much.
This is Denise. So may I suggest that we also take this offline? I think it's a great topic to address, and several people have prompted some really good questions and some ideas in my mind about how we should. And I think we need, as a group, to give more thought to how we want to structure the interaction with the community on these issues. And, for example, it may make sense to incorporate this into a general ballroom session, but also specifically reach out to the council and stakeholder groups and perhaps do something more targeted to help engender a greater awareness and give a more in-depth opportunity for Q&As among the group that's going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting in this area. But I would suggest that we also continue this discussion in email and revisit it in early January and decide how we want to use Singapore best.
That sounds like a good idea. So it looks like we're starting to have people drop off. Was there any, Aubrey, you still have a hand up? Is that, you still have a comment?
Sorry, that's a remainder hand.
Okay, and Margie, did you still want to?
To remain your hand, sorry.
Okay. So I think we got through a lot, and I think we have a lot to do, and so we'll get something out to you soon so we understand where we're going for the next meeting or meetings and, with a direction towards Singapore, and we'll get this all decided.
Great.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.